For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe and feel free to pay anyway, and a Dankeschön to viewers in Germany for making it number 9 on our all-time list of views by jurisdiction. If not for the complexity of their grammatical rules, that pretty much stop us there. Was für ein... where was I? Oh yeah, Rudi Dornbusch, the German economist who said that, quote, in economics, things take longer to happen than you think they will, and then they happen faster than you thought they could, end quote. Which is also true of intellectual shifts, including the gathering rout of climate alarmism. Thus, Roger Pilkey Jr. just quoted Axios from January 13th that, quote, the climate agenda's fall from grace over the past year has been stunning in speed, scale, and scope, end quote. And then he adds, quote, the recent change in the climate conversation has been stunning. Catastrophism is out. Pragmatism is in, end quote. Well, we'll see about the pragmatism, as the kinds of people who call themselves practical on this, as on other issues, frequently seem to lack either a mental rudder or a moral compass. But when RPJ also reflects on a friendly profile of himself in the Swedish magazine Kvartal that, quote, my, how the world has changed, end quote, we say, you ain't fooling. For instance, Bloomberg Green faces the grim reality even in the land of the Swedish doom goblin. Quote, 6 years ago, the cobbled square outside Sweden's parliament buzzed with energy as Greta Thunberg and her Fridays for Future demonstrators urged passing lawmakers to act on climate change through loud hailers and whistles. On a recent Friday, it was far different. Two protesters, a small cardboard sign, and a quiet vigil. The energy that's drained out of the campaign mirrors a broader deflation of green ambitions in Sweden and across the continent, end quote. Naturally, they take a shot at Donald Trump, the orange climate demon, but they admit that in Europe, the politics has changed, quote, especially where climate and cost of living policies have clashed, end quote. Well, okay, they may not like it, but to their credit, they're realistic enough to note serious difficulties, including that the green energy transition, empirically speaking, has raised costs rather than lowering them, and indeed has raised them far enough to create a climate policy crisis in many places. Even more remarkably, the Atlantic Weekly Planet runs a balanced guest essay deploring the, quote, remarkably broken, end quote, climate debate in the United States, where, it says, quote, leaders of one political party frame climate change as an existential emergency that threatens human life and prosperity. Leaders of the other dismiss it as a distraction from economic growth and energy security, end quote. Now, that's already a surprisingly balanced portrayal of the two positions. And then it continues, quote, economists like me, trained to think about trade-offs, are uneasy with both camps. But in practice, we have helped fuel the extremes of this dysfunctional debate, end quote, including by not calling out the maniacs on the alarmist side. Well, if that's how you feel, get started. And here's a good place. 2 weeks ago, we noted that Javier Vinas had made a prediction and issued a challenge with regard to global temperature, the Hunga Tonga eruption, and models that overstress CO2 and can't handle volcanoes. Specifically, he said temperatures will fall from this unexplained spike that we had in 2023 to 24. And they did. Sea surface temperatures are already back to 2022 levels. So doesn't that mean his prediction was right and the models were wrong? Well, it didn't stop Bloomberg Green from whimpering, quote, the global average temperature numbers are in for 2025 and they're not good. Last year was the third hottest on record, trailing only the previous 2 years, end quote. Nor did it deter Canada's government from rushing in where the well-informed fear to tread. Quote, Canada forecasts 2026 to be among the hottest years on record, end quote. And then it peddled the usual model pseudo-precision about how, quote, based on current modeling, the global mean temperature in 2026 is predicted to fall in the range of 1.35 degrees Celsius and 1.53 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, end quote, without knowing even to within a degree what it was in 1837. But even more importantly, what if it's not? What if 2026 instead continues the cooling trend since that 2023-24 anomaly? Will they admit they were wrong? And will those now repenting of having failed to speak out do something absolutely wild like, speak out? Speaking of which, the San Bernardino Sun reports that, quote, a recent series of winter storms that dumped rain across Southern California and snow in the Sierra Nevada has recharged local reservoirs, leaving many water agency officials confident in their supplies and the state officially drought-free for the first time in a quarter century, end quote. Of course, back when the state was dry, something that had happened repeatedly throughout known history, it was declared a condition that would never end and proof positive of man-made climate breakdown, including by noted climate scientist Leonardo DiCaprio. So, does anyone now want to say sorry? And now, a word from our sponsor, which as always is you, including all the folks who've been hitting the thanks button on YouTube. We really appreciate it, but we're up against a big challenge, we're up against well-funded opponents. So please, if you haven't already given, the quickest way is here. Help us make our budget for the first half of the year, for the year as a whole, so we can keep bringing you these videos. Now we go back to me. Also, from the world of predictions that didn't age well, the New York Times Climate Forward declares, as if there were nothing to see, that, quote, last year, greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. jumped 2.4% according to new estimates by the Rhodium Group, a research firm. What caused the jump? More coal burning and colder weather, end quote. Say, didn't you just tell us there was an unstoppable green energy transition and unstoppable warming? Then we'll skip right past Bloomberg Green emailing, would you eat trash to save the climate? No, not even mentally. And now, put down your lifestyle and crawl away slowly. The withering of the climate scare, in the presence of extreme lack of heat, has led some chronic malcontents to pivot to plastic pollution as a reason to shut down the fossil fuel industry rather than handle waste better and avoid hysteria. See, different joke, same punchline. And now, Scientific American shrieks, quote, world has entered an era of global water bankruptcy, UN warns, end quote. And we all know what the UN's opinion is worth. And we predict that the proposed remedy will be to end free enterprise, destroy Western civilization, and eat government-rationed bugs. It usually is. And now, for a change of pace, a Protoceratops. Yes, we can say it without stumbling, because we had the plastic model as a kid, and we would be totally down to go and look for its remains or any other dinosaur in the deserts of Mongolia. And some might say good riddance to us, while others question the relevance to climate of our mentioning that it was in those deserts that the first evidence was found of dinosaur eggs, and yes, they were Protoceratops. But the relevance, and why you would not be rid of us, is that it's an email from New Scientist inviting us to go on their, quote, one-of-a-kind expedition to paleontological hotspots of Mongolia, end quote, and in August, no less. And yet, of course, New Scientist is big on this climate crisis. They just don't really seem to believe in it, including the literalness of hotspots. So, we dug into the topic further, so to speak, and if you haven't totally lost your sense of humor on climate, or anything else, you'll surely scoff at, quote, how climate change is fueling the Dzud crisis in Mongolia, end quote. And then you'll go off and Google whether Dzud is the currency and it's collapsing due to CO2, or it's an animal becoming scarce due to CO2, or it's how they say dude in Ulaanbaatar and they're doing it too much due to CO2. And the answer, courtesy of that same United Nations Office for Disaster Risk Reduction article, which was cribbed from the Asian Development Bank Institute, is that a Dzud is, quote, a unique climate disaster marked by extreme cold, snowstorms, and unforgiving ice, end quote. Right. Serious cold weather, and thus obviously the result of heat because, altogether now, Mongolia is warming faster than the average, and the effects of climate change that will strike sometime soon have also already struck. Then, from halfway around the world, but eerily similar, Heatmap Daily emails us, quote, with more snow on the way this week for the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, extreme heat is probably far from most Americans' minds, end quote. Indeed. But to an alarmist with a hammer, everything looks like a red-hot nail. So they go on to deplore the government not bossing people around because they're too stupid to adjust to the heat wave that isn't happening. Quote, most people who die in heat waves die inside. Mobile homes are particularly lethal in extreme heat, end quote. So, they say, Leviathan should ride to the rescue by restricting choice in housing and driving up costs. But we say, why do the people who keep getting everything about climate change wrong think they're smart enough to tell everyone else how to live their lives? Then in the newsletter, we return to our deep dive into last summer's U.S. Department of Energy Red Team Climate Report. Last week, we looked at the lack of a warming hotspot in the tropical troposphere, or indeed the global troposphere for that matter, which is a critical point where model predictions fail so obviously that even the IPCC concedes it, while burying it deep in the back pages. But for this week's excursion, the Department of Energy team went on to point out that the mismatch goes further than just predicting too much warming. Climate models embed a feedback process by which warming increases with altitude throughout the troposphere up to a height of about 16 kilometers. And the models predict an especially strong amplification of surface warming between 8 and 12 kilometers up. They even drew a diagram showing what the models predict versus the vertical warming pattern that you'd expect if greenhouse gases essentially have no effect. And they plotted what the data show. And guess what? It's that the models are wrong again. So how did the IPCC hide this result? Very carefully. Oh, and speaking of extinct things, which Protoceratops tragically is, and which we hope the climate alarmist movement soon will be, never mind the lunatics blocking traffic, or the Swedish scolds beginning of a mass extinction, or whatever bug-eyed academic is quoted this week claiming that 20% of global species will disappear by 3 years ago. Because there's a real extinction rebellion going on, and it's happening among the world's species, which, a recent study says, are holding up just fine. They're refusing to go extinct. Instead of extinction rates going up, as all the clever people have been insisting was happening due to the eco-crisis du jour all our lives, remember Silent Spring? The data show that they, quote, generally declined in the last 100 years, end quote. And ironically, it's a triumph for environmentalism, but they try to hide it while their adversaries celebrate it. And another detail here, nearly two-thirds of extinctions happened on islands, which are especially vulnerable to invasive species and to habitat loss. But just 20% of the world's species live on islands, or don't live. So, extrapolating from those numbers to mainland areas necessarily biases extinction predictions upwards. And it gets worse, because the authors predictably apologize for bringing good news about the environment, as if it were a dirty secret, not a heartwarming success, that half a century of efforts to save nature are actually showing signs of working. And they especially grovel because climate change hasn't overwhelmed the benefit of things like reducing pollution, as alarmists were eagerly anticipating that they would. Instead, they say, quote, past extinctions strongly suggest that climate change is not an important threat to biodiversity. Remarkably, we found here that species-level extinctions related to climate change have not significantly increased over the last approximately 200 years, end quote. But they're not going to leave it there. Oh no. They add, quote, we also emphasize that these past extinctions might not reflect future threats, end quote. Yeah, models say, lest yet again the agony of victory should overwhelm the thrill of defeat. And now, the agony of beam curd. From the CO2science.org archive, glycine max L mer is one of the world's most important crops. Yep, that's soybeans. They're grown around the world, and they provide us with a steady supply of tofu, bean paste, and soy milk, all of which we at CDN could happily do without. But soy can also be fed to livestock, and in fact, that's what most of it is used for. So the next time we sit down to feast on a nice steak dinner, we'll thank the farmers who grew the soy that the cows feasted on. And we'll thank the CO2 the soy feasted on. Because since 1979, there have been 290 experiments showing that on average, an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere boosted soy growth by 47.9%, and an extra 600 parts per million by 70.7%, and an extra 900 parts per million by 80.9%. So, the future is filled with joy for the humble little soy. Who wants more tofu? Strange. Silence. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I am enjoying one aspect of the climate crisis that is accelerating, and that's the alarmist's flight to reality.